radio tragedy in Gilbert. Five people killed in what's being called a murder-suicide. One of the victims reportedly a young child. Two people escaped serious injury. Their small helicopter crashed into a Phoenix neighborhood.
The rotor was still going. It was terrible in regards to the noise, deafening noise that it was making.
Nobody on the ground was hurt either. A woman dies hiking a steep trail in the Superstition Mountains.
I can see the ledge where she allegedly fell from, and it is a cliff face. It is anywhere from 30 to 50 feet as they are approximating at this point.
Activity at the Tucson home where 6-year-old Isabel Solis disappeared nearly 12 days ago. Her mother and father visited the house separately with police escorts.
It's neither a tip nor a search warrant, but it is a continuation of our investigative efforts.
No conclusive evidence, an autopsy on the Olympic swimmer from Norway who died in his hotel room in Flagstaff.
Whether or not there was some underlying heart condition or something else, we just don't know.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of York Avenex traffic is service of Village in 4 o'clock hour. Look for a wreck Bullard Avenue at Wandale. Also, we have a fender bender eastbound I-10 at Baseline. Another wreck westbound I-10 at Estrella Parkway. Fender bender northbound I-17 at Dunlap. And look for another wreck southbound I-17, this one at the 101. Today is Pie Rush Wednesday at Village Inn. Stop by and get a free slice of double crust fruit or our new tin roof sundae pie with dine-in purchase. Get your free slice today only at Village Inn. Here's your forecast.
Jim Howell for the Cap-N-X Weather Center. 92 degrees, our forecast for Thursday afternoon, but we do warm Friday into the weekend of the mid-90s. No triple digits, though, because the first of next week, some cooling, we're back to the upper 80s. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 Cap-N-X.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we are at 93 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. Coming up, it's the Legalese Radio Show with your host, Dennis Willinchek. You're listening to Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
811, know what's below. 811.
What is he going on about? That song is driving me crazy.
Today at school, one of his friends told him about Call Before You Dig. You know, 811.
Right. Utility lines can be buried in yards, under streets, alleys, even beneath vacant land. It's dangerous and possibly very expensive to hit one of those lines. Calling 811 gets your utility lines marked for free.
811, know what's below. 811, know what's below.
You're starting to sound like him.
811, know what's below.
Brother.
Your safety is our priority at Southwest Gas.
As Arizona works for a better future, it's important to get involved. Running for state office with clean elections is a great way to make a difference in your community. Passed by the people of Arizona, Clean Elections helps candidates spend less time raising campaign funds and more time listening to the needs of voters. It ensures every Arizona citizen a voice in the state's political process. Exercise your right to get involved. Run for office with Clean Elections. Visit cleanelections101.com.
Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
When I grew up,
you're out of order.
I want to be a lawyer just like you.
You're out of order.
Good for you, son.
The whole trial is out of order.
If there's one thing America needs,
they're out of order.
It's more lawyers.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what America needs. This is Dennis Willinchek with Jack Willinchek, and we're here every week on Independent Talk Radio 1100 KFNX in Midtown Phoenix studios, and show is Legalese, and every week we talk with an interesting guest, and this week is no exception. We have with us the Governor's General Counsel, Joe Shirata, who is with us in studio here today. And welcome, Joe, to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to see you. Pleasure. And Joe has a very fascinating job as General Counsel to the Governor, and we're going to talk about that over the next hour. But let me give you a brief background about Joe. Joe serves, as I say, recently appointed. What is it now?
It'll be a year this month.
Is it really a year? Wow, that's amazing. I didn't think it was that long. Anyway, Joe advises the governor regarding legal issues and assists the governor during the process of judicial appointments, which is, of course, very important. I think we saw that with the Supreme Court, which we're going to be talking about with Joe later, the U.S. Supreme Court, and how important that is regarding the president. Well, it's, you know, the same in the state. Very important thing. Joe manages the litigation involving the governor and began his legal career with the Phoenix law firm of Fenimore Craig, has been in-house counsel for several Fortune 500 companies. And prior to joining governor's office, Joe served as general counsel to the Arizona Department of Administration and chair of the governor's Regulatory Review Council, which we can talk about also, because I'm not sure anybody knows what that is,
sure,
except you, but I certainly don't. Joe received his bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Michigan and his law degree from Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. I think it's in Tennessee anyway, right?
It is, Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you. All right. Well, Joe, as I said, it is a pleasure to be able to have you on the show. And I guess the first thing that I'm curious about, you just came back from Washington, D.C., I know, and you were there right at the council table on this big SB 1070 case, which is a phenomenal thing to be involved in. Why don't you tell our listening audience about that experience and what you take from that?
Sure. Well, it was an incredible honor to be there with Governor Brewer, who was also in the courtroom. She was center, right behind the bar, front row. I had the honor and the privilege of representing her in the state, along with Paul Clement, at council table. And something Governor Brewer vowed from the beginning, if necessary, we would take this to the Supreme Court to decide a very important issue of constitutional law, of state sovereignty, of the 10th Amendment, and the doctrine of preemption. And we were fortunate enough to have Paul Clement, a former Solicitor General, a former law clerk of Antonin Scalia, represent the state of Arizona and Governor Brewer. And
he's the same lawyer, by the way, that was on the health care
That is correct.
Recently.
And Governor Brewer is also in the state, one of the 26 states in the Obamacare matter as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Sure.
But tell me what I guess the first thing I'm interested in is, what are your impressions now sitting there in the Supreme Court of the United States on an important case like that? What's it like?
Well, at first it was surreal. It was hard to believe. And then when the justices come in a little bit right after 10, they read an opinion from the bench. Justice Breyer read a tax opinion, which didn't sound that interesting. I'll have to go back and read the case.
So they actually read the opinions.
Well, it's a synopsis of what
okay.
the case is about and kind of what their holding is and why they held the way they did. And so they announced that from the bench. And then immediately thereafter, the petitioner, in this case Arizona and Governor Brewer, through Paul Clement, stood up and started making their argument. And I guess the first note, if you will, that it was very interesting. Mr. Clement went on for almost 2 minutes before a question was asked, which is unusual. Usually the justices are jumping right in with questions, and he got to go through a good part of his argument, and then the flow of questions started coming in. And I think the first question came from Justice Sotomayor, and she was asking really a question that wasn't negative, but saying, will this lead to, you know, perhaps extended stops and kind of Fourth Amendment questions? And later on, I think with some of her questioning of Solicitor General Varelli, it was clear that she didn't seem – it's hard to read what the actual opinion would be, but she didn't seem to think that Section 2B, this is the reasonable lawful stop and reasonable suspicion one could ask for the immigration status, that was problematic from a constitutional standpoint.
Now, let me ask you something about that. It looked to me – and again, I read it when it first – the transcript when it first came out, so I'm a little fuzzy on it right now. But what I do recall is at the end of the day was that 2B is probably going to survive the way I saw it. From all the questioning I could see.
I think that's fair if the questioning turns out to be true.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, there are other provisions that, as I saw it, the way Roberts was at least speaking, that might not survive. Because he kept saying, let's not focus on that kind of, you know, let's put that aside. Let's focus on the 2B thing. At least that's how I read it. You were there.
Well, 2B is the heart of SB
right.
1070. That is, I think, the linchpin, very important. And if that is upheld, that is going to be a great victory for Governor Brewer, for the state of Arizona, and that would lead to the injunction being lifted.
Because I think the other ones have to do with employer.
Yeah, there's two provisions that I think we've got a very strong case on. It's 2B and then Section 6. That is where an officer stops somebody and believes that a public offense has been committed that could lead to somebody being removed. They can make a warrantless arrest. It's just authorizing the officer to make a warrantless arrest where they have that power in other areas of the law. And that's actually where the Ninth Circuit had a split with, I believe, the Tenth Circuit, where they said that was a power the state could have without any authorization of the federal government. So that was something that needs to be resolved.
Yeah.
And I think that will hopefully be they'll be upheld, the injunction will be lifted, and will survive.
I guess the question there is, would it be in conflict, right, with the federal authority to arrest or to deport?
Well, and that was made very clear by Chief Justice Roberts when he, I think Solicitor General Verrilli got nine words out, and Chief Justice Roberts said, let's just make this very clear. Is this case about ethnic or racial profiling? And Solicitor General said it is not. And that's what Governor Brewer is saying throughout. The bill doesn't allow that. Federal law doesn't allow that.
You know, while we're on that, why do you think he said that? I mean, that's in a little bit in conflict, it seems to me, with some of the president's prior remarks, at least his famous, you know, remarks about the candy store, the ice cream store.
Ice cream store, yeah.
Yeah, it seems to me in conflict with his prior remarks. So why do you think they gave that up so easily? Because once it's not about that, what is it about?
Well, they had to give it up. It wasn't in the record. They never made the case about that. So, and that was the refreshing thing about the, you know, going to the Supreme Court. We were looking at the facts and the law in an objective setting, and their argument is preemption.
Yeah.
That's their sole argument, that SB 1070 conflicts, and it doesn't. It doesn't. It's parallel to federal law. It's assisting with the enforcement of federal law, and it's something that's being done today in the state on an ad hoc basis. And that was, Paul Clement's point. How can something that's already allowed and constitutional on an ad hoc basis all of a sudden turn into something that's unconstitutional because the state is saying –
on a systemic basis. Yeah,
yeah. And having a policy of that to make sure certain localities didn't have sanctuary-type policies.
But, you know, I thought it was interesting when Scalia got into some of these analogies. I mentioned to you off the air, I find that some of the things the Supreme Court justices say to me are almost silly or childish in some of the cases as I listen to them, some of the analogies they give. And, you know, I think people kind of don't like that. But having said all that, and they talk a heck of a lot, you know.
And they interrupt each other.
Yeah. And I don't know how much of it's productive, frankly. But having said all that, I thought Scalia brought up a good point, analogizing, if you recall, to the FCC. I don't know if you remember that analogy he gave. But he said, you know, what's so different about this than dealing with FCC issues, which are dealt with all the time? I mean, you've got interstate federal authority, but states within their borders have the right to keep their borders secure by inspecting goods. By making sure, when you drive to California, do you not get stopped?
He read the inspection clause of the
right.
Right.
I thought it was a good analogy. What was your impression of that?
Well, and that was his point. I mean, and that's why this is a very important Tenth Amendment case. States have dual sovereignty under our federal system. We don't have a national government. We have a federal government. And states have certain enumerated powers, and if they don't have those powers, they are then left to the states and to the people, as was made clear by Justice Kennedy last year in what's called the Bond decision. So there's a doctrine of there's inherent authority of the states to act. And from the founding of this country, states have been collaborative with the federal government in enforcing federal law.
You know, before we take a break, we're going to have to take our first break in a minute, but that's a great point, and I want to follow up on that, honestly, when we come back, because seems to me there's a fundamental difference of opinion on this. My opinion, and I think yours is, and I think probably the majority opinion is going to be, the states have the fundamental power. It's what they cede to the federal government out of that power that the federal government has. I think the Obama administration and some of his cohorts think the opposite. I think they think the federal government is preeminent in everything, and then they just dole out some authority to the states. And I think that's what I saw in that argument. What's your take on that?
That's exactly right. And I think the only other point I would say is, but where the federal government acts and they have the authority to act under the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, then the federal law is supreme.
Yeah, and there's no question immigration is one of those areas, but what part of immigration?
Well, immigration and the Supreme Court, unanimous Supreme Court under Brennan years ago called Decanus v. Bicca said there is a role for the states. Any regulation of immigration, which means who can enter the country and then who can be removed, is the federal prerogative under the Constitution. But regulations around that is not necessarily preempted. And I think people have lost sight of that precedent, and we'll see if that is reaffirmed by the Supreme Court here in June.
Yeah, well, that's great. We have Joe Sciarrata, General Counsel to Governor Brewer. We're going to take a break for some messages, and after that we're going to continue talking about SB 1070, the health care bill, and all kinds of issues affecting the state.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Did you know that you can now refinance your mortgage even if you're upside down, underwater? Capital Pacific Mortgage wants you to know about HARP 2.0, a new government-backed mortgage refinance program. No appraisal is needed. You can lower your payments and save thousands, but you must act quickly. This is a limited-time offer. Call 480-820-1169. 480-820-1169. Capital Pacific Mortgage Incorporated. NMLS number 158656. Arizona Mortgage Broker number 0903082.
If you're one of the 15 million people who want to be free from chronic pain, then you need to experience The Joint, the chiropractic place, the new revolution in chiropractic care. Feel better with no appointments or insurance hassles with four visits for just $49 a month. Visit us today because when you're in pain, you want relief now.
On the southwest corner of Scottsdale and Shea in the Fresh and Easy Plaza.
For more information or to locate a clinic near you, visit us online at thejoint.com.
Did you know short sales can erase all home loan debt?
Don't walk away. Many banks and the government now pay sellers to complete short sales.
I'm Rick Elton.
And I'm Dave Elton. Elton Realty has served the Valley for over 15 years.
Every short sale is different. Outcomes are not guaranteed.
Call for a free consultation that best serves your situation and get a fresh start today.
480-451-3318. That's 480-451-3318.
Or visit eltonrealty.com.
Laura Ingram, mornings at 6 on KFNX.
Dennis Willinchek and Jack Willinchek. We're here on Legalese, Independent Talk Radio, News Talk Radio, 1100 KFNX. And this week we're pleased to have Joe Shirata, who is the governor's general counsel, which is a big job advising the governor regarding legal issues. Joe, we were talking before the break about SB 1070. And gosh, you know, you could talk really for hours about it. You think you can't, but then as you get into it, there are just so many nuances of it, really.
Well, it was interesting. The oral argument was scheduled for an hour, and it actually went an hour and 20 minutes. And that is somewhat unprecedented.
Unprecedented. Yeah, very unusual.
So the justices were very interested and added 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, they were jumping all over one another. But we were talking a little bit about, at the break about the issue of the – what really I saw as is bothering what I would call the Democrats on there, you know, Sotomayor, Breyer, Ginsburg – they seem to be, and of course Kagan wasn't there, but it seems like they were obsessed with this issue, the one issue I saw, as whether there's going to be an additional detention or delay. They seem to almost buy into the rest of it. Is that your impression?
Well, I think it is because Justice Sotomayor told the Solicitor General his arguments as to 2B were, quote, not selling well and to move on.
Right.
Because federal law actually has provisions in several locations within the immigration statutes that says no federal, state, or local law can in any way limit the communication between localities and the federal government. And federal law also goes on to say the federal government is mandated to respond to the states.
Okay, now let me interrupt you, because the other point that I took out of, again, reading the transcript when I did was, and I think this is mainly from Roberts. Roberts, as I recall it, was saying basically the following, to keep it simple. You know, what's the problem here? That's how I heard it. What's the big problem here? Are we talking about some officer of the law, after reasonably stopping somebody on a legitimate stop, which it has to be, making a phone call, right, to somebody at one of these centers, and again, I can't remember even the name of who you call, but you'll tell us, and some federal center, whether it's ICE or something else, and basically determining whether that person is here legally or not in probably a few minutes' time. So the issue of whether or not they're being detained wrongfully for extended periods of time, is that a real issue?
Well, and that's the other problem with this case. We don't know. The laws was enjoined before it even took effect. And that's another important facet of what I think the Supreme Court will be dealing with, a facial challenge versus an as-applied challenge.
Okay, yeah, that's a great point.
And that's a very important – it's a nuanced legal argument.
Let's talk about what
sure.
that means.
Well, there's a doctrine called the Salerno Doctrine, and the Supreme Court has said courts should be very loath to enjoin a duly enacted – state or federal statute where the lawmakers elected by the populace have put in a law. There's a presumption that there's constitutionality. And if there is in any way a constitutional application of the statute, it cannot be enjoined facially.
Right.
But SB 1070 was.
In other words.
In advance.
Yeah.
That's different than saying the statute, though it has constitutional applications, if it's being applied in certain ways that infringe on constitutional rights, then a separate challenge can be brought.
That's
saying,
a whole different issue.
It's a whole different issue. But we're not there. And
right.
And another excellent point Mr. Clement made is that, the constitutional protections still apply under SB 1070. And SB 1070 says when practicable. And this will be part of a regular lawful stop, which is already happening today
anyway.
And there's
a lot of law, I think he pointed out, on that issue, so we're not blazing new ground here.
No, absolutely
including on how long you can detain someone, as
correct.
He pointed
out. It's called
out.
Terry stop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, his argument I thought was very, very good, honestly. And I want to say this, on the air. I was just flabbergasted, really, by this guy because, on the one hand, he's arguing the health care law, which, we'll get to, hopefully, a couple of weeks before, and the amount of sheer enormity of knowledge that you have to cram into your head on that is incredible to begin with.
Yeah.
To anticipate the nuances of discussion and response to specific questions, it's incredible to me.
Yeah, it was an honor and actually a humbling experience to be able to work with Mr. Clement with his background. Some have said down the road he could be on the short list for the Supreme Court. But just the brilliance and thinking on a different level as to really anticipating questions that were going to come and then responding in a truthful, honest
yeah.
way, but picking out precedent not even from the past decade, but going back to the founding.
Yeah. And what's truly amazing is that these guys can retain, again, the fine points of some of these decisions because he was incredible in distinguishing – some of the cases – now, granted, that's what he does. I mean, he lives with these cases,
right.
Which the rest of us really don't. I mean, this is kind of a tangent to most practices.
And more so than others because he was Solicitor
yeah.
General for a
sure,
period
of course.
Of time.
But even having said that, it's just an amazing feat to be able to draw on that knowledge and just be able to answer a question on a spontaneous basis and cite cases and the factual nuances of cases. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, I got to say, for a lawyer to listen to. As part of your preparation with a guy like that, do you actually go over these things with him and ask him questions and hit him with things that you think the other side's going to ask?
Yes, even at that level, you do what's called a moot court, and we did a couple of those in advance. Every side does that, and you lay out your argument. You get questions. People ask you various questions. We had some hot panels asking
right.
very tough questions and some that we saw were from the Supreme Court. And it makes you think and make sure your arguments are properly vetted and properly cited. And then you go from there to really refine those answers down the road.
Okay, I've got to ask these questions. I mean, because I was fascinated, again, by his depth of knowledge about how things work in the real world and how they actually go on. He's not an Arizona resident, but he was going in detail about how the processes work, which I thought was just incredible. How does he know that stuff?
Well, he read the joint appendix, put it together. There was a several hundred page joint appendix as to Arizona procedure, Arizona law. He worked with our counsel here locally, with myself, to understand those procedures. And if we had any questions, then the whole group would go back and research it and get the answer. And so to get some of that information was a team effort. But he's the one who got it, incorporated it, and was able to recite it when needed.
And just coming off, again, a big case like the one he did, I just can't believe
yeah.
he had the vigor and energy to even do it. But anyway, having said all that, what do you think of Mr. Verrilli?
Well, the Solicitor General, you don't become Solicitor General unless you're talented. He's had a very incredible career.
Because he didn't get high reviews on the health care argument, nor on this one.
No, on this one. Well, I think he had tough arguments on both cases. And sometimes when you have tough positions you have to take as a lawyer, sometimes it's tough to make those arguments.
Yeah, but let's talk about that. Did you think he made the right arguments?
Well,
I got the impression he focused on the wrong thing.
I think he did. Yeah. I think that's exactly right. As a matter of strategy, I think he should have moved on from 2B a lot sooner and given up some points that when Justice Sotomayor says it's not selling well, it's time to move on. And
was there something he said that you can think of right now that you went, your mouth dropped and went, I can't believe he just really did that because it hurt him badly.
Well, he kind of went back to the Hines precedent, saying that this could be harassment, and I think that infuriated a lot of the justices, especially when Chief Justice Roberts said, this is not about ethnic profiling in any way, is it? And he said, you're correct, Chief Justice.
But then he proceeded to argue
that. I don't think strategically that was wise.
Right.
And he never was able to really explain or distinguish dual sovereignty and the fact that federal law mandates the federal government to respond to all inquiries, and that states and localities cannot be limited in any way from inquiring or sharing immigration status. And for him not to some way concede that and move on, I think weaken the government's credibility.
All right. So basically, real quickly before our next break, and then we're going to move on during the second half of the show to other issues. But your take on it is, at the end of the day, that on the guts of the SB 1070 law, the state wins, from what you heard, at least, if there's any indication.
If that's any indication, as Governor Brewer said, if there's any such thing as a good day in court, I think the Governor Brewer in the state of Arizona had that last week on the heart of SB 1070.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And so basically, just to close out the half hour for the news, what do you think the state might not win on and isn't important?
Well, The provisions that I think are going to be closer calls are Section 3, which is making a state crime out of the registration provision, which is federal law, parallels federal law, does not in any way conflict with it or is an obstacle.
You're talking about whether people carry their papers on them.
Right, and that is never that need to, that have to register under federal law and that have to carry them under federal law.
Okay. We'll be back with Joe Sciarrotta, General Counsel to Governor Brewer, in just a few minutes after the news break. This is Dennis Willinchek, Jack Willinchek, on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX on Legalese.
Radio, I'm Veronica Dela Cruz. Family and fans are mourning the death of former NFL star Junior Seau, who apparently committed suicide today. In his prime, Seau was a force to be reckoned with.
Rivers back to throw, steps up, he's in trouble, down he goes! Junior Seau, the former San Diego Charger, comes up on the first sack of the game.
Charges are being filed in the hazing death of a Florida A&M University drum major who died after being severely beaten 5 months ago.
I have come to believe that hazing is a term for bullying. It's bullying with a tradition that we cannot bear in America.
Prosecutor Lawson Lamar says 13 people will be charged in the case. A former engineer for BP has now been indicted on charges that he deleted about 300 text messages relating to the company's blown-out well in the Gulf of Mexico. Prosecutors say the text indicated the well was spewing far more oil than BP was telling the public. This is NBC News Radio.
Now you can...
Arizona News Radio, tragedy in Gilbert, 5 people killed in what's being called a murder-suicide. One of the victims reportedly a young child. 2 people escaped serious injury. Their small helicopter crashed into a Phoenix neighborhood.
The rotor was still going. It was terrible in regards to the noise, deafening noise that it was making.
Nobody on the ground was hurt either. A woman dies hiking a steep trail in the Superstition Mountains.
I can see the ledge where she allegedly fell from, and it is a cliff face. It is anywhere from 30 to 50 feet that they are approximating at this point.
Activity at the Tucson home where 6-year-old Isabel Solis disappeared nearly 12 days ago. Her mother and father visited the house separately with police escorts.
It's neither a tip nor a search warrant, but it is a continuation of our investigative efforts.
No conclusive evidence, an autopsy on the Olympic swimmer from Norway who died in his hotel room in Flagstaff.
Whether or not there was some underlying heart condition or something else, we just don't know.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of York Avenix traffic, a service of check into cash. We still have that wreck eastbound I-10 at baseline. That's at the on-ramp. Going to create some problems, obviously, gang. Look for another wreck westbound I-10 at Estrella, northbound I-17 at Dunlap. You'll find another collision. And finally, southbound I-17, Bethany Home Road. Check into cash guarantees the lowest rate on titled secure loans. Even if you have a loan with someone else, check into cash will help you buy it back, and you'll save money. Plus, ask about their check into cash $50 cash back offer. Hurry, check into cash, and soon. Here's your forecast.
Jim Howell for the KFNX Weather Center. 92 degrees, our forecast for Thursday afternoon, but we do warm Friday into the weekend of the mid-90s. No triple digits, though, because the first of next week, some cooling. We're back to the upper 80s. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we're 93 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. Coming up, more of the Legalese Radio Show with your host, Dennis Willinchek. You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, Ph.D., host of Healthline. Join me live to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Healthline, the world's leader in cell-resonant nutrition technology, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works. This month, Garlicidin is on special. It's great support for mucous membranes throughout the entire body. Allicin, the active fraction of garlic, when it's stable, is one of the most effective, if not the most effective, biofilm buster available. And of course, one of the richest, most powerful sources of stable allicin is Garlicidin. What an ace for all your mucous membranes. Buy two bottles, get the third one free. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works for yourself.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
The Lars Larson Show is on the air.
There are a number of ways that you can take part in this program. We call it the best conversation in talk journalism. So we talk about the facts, we kick them back and forth, we throw in some opinion, and you get a chance to weigh in too. Easy enough to do. Toll free and nationwide, 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails can be sent, and they go directly to me, talk@LarsLarson.com.
Tune in to the Lars Larson Show, late nights on KFNX.
Well, I hope so. This is Dennis Willinchek and Jack Willinchek, and we're here with Joe Shirata, Governor's General Counsel. Joe, we've talked a lot about SB 1070 in our first half hour of the show. I want to change the focus of it right now, and let's talk about you a little bit, where you grew up. I know you're from Ohio originally, right?
Right, a town about 30 miles west of Ohio called Lorain, Ohio, on Lake Erie.
Which I told you I know very well because I had a case there. A case for some of the tire companies years ago that I spent some time there, so very familiar with it.
Great place to be from.
Yes. Well, there were a lot of people complaining there because the tire companies would allegedly dump all of their stuff there over the years, and people were complaining of cancer and so forth. So your dad was a doctor there. He probably saw some of those people. I may have deposed them for all I know. But I spent like months deposing doctors. But anyway, how did you wind up at Michigan from Ohio?
Well, I had to tread carefully. a lot of my family are Ohio State supporters. Actually, my wife is an Ohio State graduate of the law school.
And your wife is at the county attorney's office.
She is. She's a prosecutor.
We should mention her name. That would be nice for her.
Karen.
Mm-hmm. Karen.
Yeah. She does a great job there. It was just a wonderful academic school, a great sports school, and. It was close enough to home, but still far enough away, a couple hours away. And
I think you were the president of the school, weren't you?
I was the president of the College of Literature, Science, and Arts. It was a good-sized college there, but not the whole university.
Yeah. Right. That's
I did that 1 year, and that was enough.
Did that give you a taste for politics? Or?
Yeah, that's why I did it 1 year.
Well, let me ask you this. Without naming names, has your impression of the political world in general changed one way or the other since you have taken this job and seen things from a different viewpoint?
Well,
have you got more respect or less respect?
Well, I have to give a lot of respect to the people that work very, very hard. I know a lot of people say, "Well, it's a government job; it's got to be pretty easy." Well, I know a lot of people that are putting in 12, 14, 16-hour days.
As are you, I think.
As I am on some days, yeah. The governor works very hard, and when she's traveling. when she's in the office with various meetings and briefings and making a lot of tough decisions on a daily basis.
Yeah, it can't be easy.
It takes a very strong person, a very principled person, and it's an absolute honor to work for a governor that is strong and principled, but yet, you know, very wonderful to work with, a very good, decent person.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it seems to me that whatever side of the aisle you're on, whoever's in charge takes a lot of heat, okay? And you have to be a certain type of person to be able to deal with that. I mean, I don't know how you do, frankly, which amazes me all the time. The kind of criticism that's hailed at her, people that say these cheap things, cheap shots in the blogs and so forth. How does she deal with that?
Well, I mean, she knows what she believes in. She knows what the truth is. And that's one thing that I have learned through this. Sometimes fiction carries the day and not facts.
Yeah.
And stories can get a life of their own, and it's just not based on anything that's accurate. So I just try and go about my day knowing what the facts are, trying to do what is right with every decision or counseling that I have to give, and you proceed based on the facts. And sometimes, obviously, perception, you've got to work to correct that because perception can become reality. But you have to know what the facts are and just deal with those and not kind of get caught up. And you have to have thick skin. I know the governor does, and she's a truth teller, and she makes tough decisions every day, and she knows that, you know, doing things that are hard.
Now, let me ask you about that. She actually ultimately makes the calls herself. I mean, there's some people I've heard say that she's being led around by certain advisors, but she actually is the one, in your experience, that makes the tough call.
Oh, absolutely. The governor is engaged. She knows the issues. I mean, she's been a politician for 30 years. She's been in the House, in the Senate, Board of Supervisors, Secretary of State. She has a great insight as to state government, and I think the fact now that we have just been ranked the 10th best state for business, the fact that we now have a surplus from a $3 billion budget, and that required extremely tough decisions, and she led all of those, and that's why the Arizona comeback's not a saying, it's reality, but that's leadership, and you don't succeed in that job if you're not engaged and not making those tough decisions.
I don't think she's as partisan as people say she is. I mean, it seems to me she tries to come down in the right place.
Yeah, and I think there she's had some vetoes this year that surprised some folks.
Right.
But she looked at it and said, this is what I think is right. And I think she got some kudos from some folks who don't usually give her kudos. So she calls them like she sees them, and I think that's what everybody wants in a leader, and that's, I think, what makes a great leader.
Well, I mean, it's obvious you respect her very much. Is she a nice person to work with?
Wonderful person.
Yeah,
very
wonderful.
Very good-natured, big heart. I never thought I'd be sitting here as counselor to the governor.
And I want to make it clear, it's not like you or somebody who is, you know, on her staff or something like that for a long period of time. You came in there from the department administration.
Right. I had worked closely with the governor's office, but I didn't know her beforehand.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And I have the utmost respect, and I'm absolutely honored to be called the general counsel to Governor Brewer.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk about some of the priorities that involve you from day to day, other than obviously SB 1070. Let's talk about the health care issue in this country. What is your job or the relation to that? Because I know you were involved in that whole mess too.
Right. The governor made the decision early on that Arizona was going to join the coalition of states. Arizona and Governor Brewer were early on one of the now 26 states. And so with the coalition, you know, we reviewed briefs, had input on those, and worked up through the 11th Circuit and then to the Supreme Court with Paul Clement's team there. And, you know, that's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, so you had to be careful in terms of input and whatnot.
So did you go back for that argument too?
I did not.
Okay.
No. Actually, seats were very tight. They were tight for our argument.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And there's only so many seats, and people only get allocated a certain amount of seats. But I think even though there was 26 states in the health care case, it was only an allocation of 6 seats per day.
Wow.
So
how do you think that's going to come out?
Well, you know, I listened to the oral arguments there. I've obviously chatted with Mr. Clement about that a little bit.
Yeah.
You can't predict, but I think.
So you feel good about it?
Well, I think so. I mean, there's a fundamental principle here that freedom means freedom, not commanding you to enter commerce so then you can regulate commerce. And if that's what the Commerce Clause means, then I guess there are no boundaries to that. And I think the questioning from
that's a good way to sum it up
from a lot of the justices showed that. Now, the key is going to be if the individual mandate falls, does the whole bill fall? And there's a severability issue there, then a very big one. I mean, you don't want to. You don't want to get rid of laws that are duly enacted by the federal legislature or any state legislature, but Congress intentionally took out the severability clause here for a reason. And it's inextricably linked, I think, to the individual mandate. So it's going to be interesting to see how they expand that doctrine. And another big doctrine that's being discussed that didn't get as much press is the expansion of Medicaid. And whether it's called the Dole Doctrine, the federal government, which it can't do directly, it cannot commandeer states, but can they do it in a way through funding, through financing, that is so egregious that it is in fact commandeering the states? And if that's the case, then that violates the Constitution. So it's going to be interesting.
Was that actually part of this case?
It was. It was actually argued the last day, and it was something that Mr. Clement drove through the process and believed it was a very important constitutional issue to be addressed, and the court did grant cert and will decide on that if they think they have to get to it. As you know, they can decide on a part of the case that makes the remainder of the case moot, and they may never have to make a decision there.
Yeah, good point. Now, of course, Medicaid is administered through the states. The cost is just skyrocketing, and the state is probably has a real problem in paying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what's causing everybody's concerned about it, you know, potential cliffs in 2014 and 2015, because as the mandates come into play under Obamacare, the burden rests with the states, and they simply will not be able to afford that. And that was kind of the argument. This had been a partnership over the years, but now with these mandates saying, if you don't do it, you're going to lose all your funding. Is that tantamount to commandeering, if you will? And
I see your point.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, we're going to take another break right now. This is Dennis Wilenchek and Jack Wilenchek on News Talk 1100 KFNX with Joe Sciarrotta, the Governor's General Counsel, talking about all kinds of legal issues that affect the state and other issues as well. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilenchek & Partners have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilenchek & Partners focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilenchek & Partners today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
At the American Lung Association, we're fighting for a day when we can all breathe easier. We're fighting for clear skies over every city and healthy lungs throughout the country. We're fighting to keep harmful secondhand smoke out of our public spaces and workplaces. And fighting to free millions of Americans from the addictive grip of tobacco and the devastating effects of lung disease. We're fighting for a day when kids no longer battle airborne poisons in their own homes or the fear of an asthma attack. The American Lung Association isn't just fighting for air. We're fighting for all the things that make it worth breathing, and we can use your help. Join us in the fight. Visit fightingforair.org and read about just a few of the many ways the American Lung Association is fighting to protect the air we breathe, both indoors and out. See what you can do at fightingforair.org.
Almost every day there's some incident, in this case, a critically injured individual in the aftermath of this Trayvon Martin case. Let's remember what Al Sharpton did to help fan the flames of racial discord leading up to this moment in time.
Laura Ingraham, morning 6 to 9, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
I'm hiding in Honduras.
Well, this is Dennis Wilenchek and Jack Wilenchek on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX News Talk Radio. And we're here with Joe Sciarrotta, who is the Governor's General Counsel. And Joe, it's been fascinating talking with you. And you can see how you can go on for hours on these things. We're just scratching the surface. But I want to change, again, the focus for our last segment, because I think it's pretty clear from what we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes that who's on that court is really critical. And I think our listeners can appreciate if they, you know, heard some of the argument or followed some of it, that you kind of can predict where people are coming from. Now, you're involved on a daily basis, I know, with this important issue of who sits on the courts here in Arizona. Just as important here, isn't it? I mean, the person who listens to the case is critical.
I think for any case, yeah. Especially, you know, for the trial court where it's impacting people's lives.
All right. Now, let me ask you.
Yeah.
So the whole thing that people think is, well, Republicans like judges that don't interfere too much, that basically follow the laws written, don't make up law. I mean, that's generally the standard deal. And that, you know, they don't like liberal Warren Court type judges that try to change our society through the law. So what is Governor Brewer's priority and yours, basically, when you deal with these issues and helping her select our judges in terms of the philosophy that she's looking for?
Well, it's not my priority.
Yeah.
It's Governor Brewer's
priority.
Well,
she makes a selection,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
I know you're involved in it.
Well, I help get all the materials together. In Arizona, it's very interesting. We have merit selection, meaning judges aren't elected, but they are nominated by a trial court commission or appellate court commission for the appellate courts. And then they send up a certain amount of names to the governor, and then the governor gets to appoint a judge in Maricopa County, Pima County, and now Pinal County, because Pinal is over.
Was Pinal added to that?
Yeah, it's over 250,000 now in the most recent census, so they're now a merit selection county.
Didn't realize that.
And I think Governor Brewer has stated publicly and shown through a lot of her selections that, I mean, she's looking for judges who will apply and interpret the law as written. You know, judicial activism, as that term has been described, is perhaps a jurist who will look to impose his or her own views or perspective or policy in interpreting or in applying the law versus what the intent was of the legislature, mm-hmm. which is the linchpin. That's critical. What is the legislative intent that drives any law or initiative or referendum is passed? And then if there's interpretations over time by the executive, you know, enforcing that law, that should be important. And judicial restraint, too, that, you know, the judges don't have to be involved in every issue if it's not left to the judge to decide that. And just to make sure that the separation powers are respected, that the legislature is truly left to do what it's enabled to do under the Constitution. The executive does what they need to do, and then the judiciary comes in and interprets that. If it's a close call, then I think, you know, that's
tough.
Where, you know, the judges have to go in and apply and interpret. And I think, you know, we've got an excellent judiciary in Maricopa County and in this state. The other counties are elected judges. And Governor Brewer takes this responsibility very seriously. It's important to her. It's important to what her legacy is. And she has appointed a lot of judges.
I think it's interesting. For example, recently, I think John Palander, if that's how you pronounce his name, I never met him, so I don't know. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. But anyway, I believe he was appointed by Governor Brewer.
That's
and
correct.
He was a fairly conservative judge for where he came from, as I remember it, from Tucson, I believe, right?
I believe that was before I became general counsel.
Yeah, but in any event, I think it's a good example because he was the author of the opinion, basically against the governor, on an important case involving the removal of the redistricting chairman.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of interesting that she appointed him really recently, and then he comes up with this decision against her, which only goes to show you, I think. And by the way, I thought her remarks were rather classy when she was commenting on this, that, you know, there's no promises made when these judges become judges. I mean, obviously, she just appointed him, and now he's faced with a decision.
Sure.
And you have to respect the fact that he makes a decision based on what he sees as right.
Absolutely.
Even if you disagree with him.
Of course. I mean, we have to respect
right.
what the court's decision is. That's what makes democracy work, and that's
right.
why this country is a great country and has survived as long as it has.
And that's a great point, because notwithstanding the decision went against the governor, instead of railing on about it like some people might, mm-hmm. she basically respected it and said that was his decision. So
that is, and you have to respect
that's the kind of person she is, I guess.
Well, that goes to separation of powers, that the court – you know, our argument was the court should not have involved itself; that it was a political question, a non-justiciable question. But they did think it was a political question that was justiciable and could make a decision. So it was a 5-0 vote, and you have to respect that. And the governor and all of the governor's staff respects that decision, and we are moving on.
I mean, one could argue that that's sort of an activist-type bench, of course, because basically they are inserting themselves into an area that arguably they might or shouldn't. But again, I think the governor did the right thing, at least in acknowledging that, you know, even though I disagree with it, I respect it. And I think that's what makes America what it is, right?
Absolutely.
So tell us other things that you do. Now, those are pretty big things. Those take up a lot of your time. And you are involved in that case to some extent, I believe, right?
Oh, more than to some extent. Yeah, quite a bit.
Well, you said it was before your time, but as I recall, you...
Justice Polander was appointed before became
general counsel. But you were actually involved in that case.
Yes, that was last November.
Yeah. And so let's talk about it. Did they do a bad job on the redistricting, in your opinion?
Who's that?
The committee.
Well, I think there's some pending lawsuits now that are questioning the process, and the governor, in looking at that, thought that the standards in the Constitution were violated, and she followed what she thought was the constitutional mandate. She gave notice of what her concerns were, received the responses back, and made the decision to remove. I think that's all going to be vetted now through these various
courts. So that will be litigated now.
I think a lot of those issues will be litigated now.
Not by the governor.
No, in the courts, because independent lawsuits have been filed.
Right. So what are the other priorities that she's working on right now that you're involved in? We've talked about SB 1070. We talked about health care. Talked about this redistricting issue. What are some of the other hot topics?
Well, judicial selection is something that I work closely on with the governor.
Let's talk about that very quickly again. So are there spots open right now that are vacant?
Yes, we actually have a vacancy in Maricopa County. We just got a list in of three names for a vacancy in Pima County.
Okay. Interesting. And
the governor just made two appointments to the Court of Appeals recently.
Yeah, I saw that. How do you get to know those people, really? I mean, the governor interviews them, right?
Right.
But, I mean, other than just an interview, how do you know whether what you're getting is what's it's cracked up to be?
Well, I mean, the merit selection process, there's quite a vetting that goes on. Letters are sent in.
But, I mean, they submit names to you, basically, and to the governor.
Right.
And does she research that these are the kinds of people that we talked about earlier that are going to?
Oh, yeah. It's a multi-page application. People are listed as references. They can be called. The governor gets input from folks as to why they think a person may or may not be a good judge. And then each candidate is interviewed. Each candidate is interviewed at least once for a position. And it is a 30 to 45 minutes substantive interview.
Right.
And, the governor asks very probing questions during that process. And at some point, you've just got to look at everything.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets a binder on each applicant that's very thick with applications and all the letters of support and the writing samples. And then you have the interview, which is, like I said, a substantive interview. And then the governor has to, again, make a very tough decision, like one of many she makes every day. Who's the best person to be on the court? Because she realizes that person's affecting people's lives.
Whether I think it's a contract case or a family. Don't you in the federal system with these appointments, it seems to me?
Oh, yeah, with the advice and consent, folks can be held up on senatorial privilege. If you can't get the 60-vote cloture, people are never heard. And we see that. There's a backlog.
The nominating process for it is really political.
I don't know a lot about the nominating process, but I'm sure, you've got to believe get the consent of the senators that are up
front. It's not like there's, at least as far as I know, there's not like there's a committee like there is
no,
in the state system.
No, there's not. I think recommendations come up through the senators.
It was worse years ago, I think, where presidents would just appoint whoever they felt like, frankly. There's a lot of controversy, if you remember, going back to John F. Kennedy's days about Francis X. Morrissey. He was a buddy of the family and all that. But rarely were people turned away.
Right.
But today, it's not like that.
No, and I don't – I was reading something a week or so ago that – Senate judiciary hearings didn't take place until the early or mid part of the last century. So there was many years where the Congress didn't even hold hearings.
Yeah, interesting. And what's in store for you, Joe, in the future? You love the job.
Yeah, that was exciting. We trying to finish up the budget here and deal with all the bills that are
coming
up.
What do you do with respect? We've got just a minute and a half, but what do you do with respect to the budget? How do you get involved in that?
Well, just if there's any legal issues there that may involve lawsuits or reviewing some language from an interpretation perspective.
And real quickly, because somebody asked me actually this question earlier, what's the distinction between your job and the Attorney General's job? How do you separate those out?
Well, very different. I represent Governor Brewer. That's my client. And
but does the Attorney General also represent her?
Can't. It's not required under law, and the governor has the ability to choose who she wants to represent her in cases.
So he can't force himself on the governor and say, I want to represent you, and you have
right, under Arizona law, the governor can choose her counsel. And it can be the Attorney General. The Attorney General's office is ably representing us in many cases. It just depends.
Because it can be a political nightmare, really, if you have a Republican governor, Democratic Attorney General.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
All right. Well, Joe Shirata, thanks so much. You see how fast it went?
Very fast.
Yeah, we'll love to have you on again if you grace our show with your presence. And we appreciate your coming on the show. This is Dennis Willinchek and Jack Willinchek on an Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Legalese, next Wednesday from 4 to 5. Thanks, Chet.
This is a complicated real estate world in which we are living. There's never been a time in history when people talked about short sales, strategic foreclosures, loan modifications, and so on. However, today that's pretty common. If you're a buyer or seller in today's market, you need the help of a professional real estate agent to navigate the murky waters, and I know just such an agent. Call Diane at Russ Lyon Sotheby's and let Diane help you sort out your real estate needs. If you owe more on your house than it's worth, a short sale might be the answer. A short sale is pretty common today, and it may be the answer for getting out from under the underwater home you're living in. To get your questions answered, just call Diane at Russ Lyon Sotheby's. There's no obligation, and Diane might just solve your real estate problem. Call Diane at 602-284-6199. That's 602-284-6199 at Russ Lyon Sotheby's. 602-284-6199.
You're listening to Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Cave Creek, Phoenix, the home of Laura Ingraham, weekdays 6 to 9 a.m., KFNX.